Good evening and welcome to this joint meeting of the Redmond and Kirkland City Councils here at Redmond City Hall for Tuesday, October 9th, 2012. With me on my right is Mayor McBride of Kirkland, and we'd like to invite you to introduce yourself briefly to our vast viewing audience, and for something fun, tell us what high school you went to. But as Mayor McBride pointed out, don't say what year you graduated. Pat?
Hi, I'm Pat Vache. I went to, it was either Richland High School or Columbia High School. It's changed its name in there someplace.
And where was that?
Richland High School was in Richland.
Hence the name.
And as in Washington.
I'm Dave Asher, and I went to Oak Ridge High School in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
All right.
Hank Martinson, Redmond City Council. I went to Mount Tahoma High School in Tacoma, Washington.
Kurt Triplett, Kirkland City Manager, and I went to Cheney High School outside of Spokane, Washington.
Tom Flynn, Redmond City Council Member. I went to Helena High School in Helena, Montana.
And I'm John Still, and I went to James Madison High School in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Mighty Knights. And Redmond City Council Member.
Okay, Doreen Marshoni, Deputy Mayor Kirkland. I went to Holy Names Academy, Seattle.
David Carson, Redmond City Council, and I went to North Valley High School in Grants Pass, Oregon, home of the Fighting Knights.
I'm Penny Sweet, Kirkland City Council. I went to Roosevelt High School.
Hank Myers, Redmond City Council. I went to Monterey High School.
Toby Nixon, the newest member of the Kirkland City Council, and I went to Shasta High School in Redding, California. Go Wolves.
I'm Kim Allen, Redmond City Council, and I went to an all-girl school, Dominican High School in Detroit. Go Ravens.
I'm Amy Wallen from the Kirkland City Council. I also went to an all-girls high school, the Somerville House High School for Girls in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia.
I'm Joan McBride, and I went to Lake Washington High School in Kirkland. Once a king, always a king.
And I'm John Marshoni, and Mayor of the City of Redmond. I went to Seattle Prep. But my brothers went to Redmond High, so there's a number of teachers at Redmond High who said, I remember when I taught you. And I said, no, I was a much better student than that.
So has it occurred to Dave and I that you may notice a wondrous glow from this end of the table?
Oh.
So if you put together Oak Ridge and Richland.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Let's turn up the lights.
The fighting photons or something.
Richland Bombers.
And Oak Ridge was the atomic city.
Well, for tonight, the subjects that came up were to talk about facilities and potential common facilities and then economic development. So I think up first is Jenny Schroeder from Kirkland Parks.
Go ahead.
Services Director, please feel free to call me Jenny. We have for you this evening a very summary review of our indoor aquatic and recreation facility plan. We completed this plan in 2006, and the beginning point was actually in 2001. We surveyed our community to find out their interest and what they believed was a need for indoor recreation. And this is really an outcome of all that work from 2001 through 2006. So I'll give you a very high-level review of the plan. As typical planning, we did do a market analysis. We looked at our existing demand for programs, what were the trends, and listening to the community, what did they feel was needed in our community to best serve them for their fitness goals, to bring their families together, and as a real community gathering location. It involved bringing together quite a few stakeholders in our community, including the school district, our own different advisory groups within the city, and again, public workshops were very much part of the process. Project goals that came out of that were, it was clear that people wanted to have this facility help enhance the quality of life in the community, as a community and as their personal health, as well as, again, a gathering place. There's not a lot of opportunities where a large group can come, whether that's for a large wedding, a large business meeting, and the like. But it was really clear they want the facility to also represent their pride in their community. But it was clear it needed to have sustainability as far as its funding for ongoing operation, and recognizing this is an expensive facility and to seek partnerships wherever possible in that development as well as ongoing maintenance. And so with all that work, we did have an architect, Opsis Architecture and Sports Management Group, help us with not only some concept drawings, but also a business plan. It was clear the community wanted a facility that when they come into the facility, it's warm and welcoming and can serve not only as an entry point, but a place they can come and meet a friend, have coffee, or socialize. Program space is very important, and having multiple use of existing space. So the vision was for a large community room that could hold for a large gathering, whether that's a business meeting, as I mentioned, or wedding, or it could be divided into three separate classrooms. A caterer's kitchen, not a full preparation kitchen, but more of a caterer's kitchen where they come and just have the warm, the food, and be able to serve. Child watch. One of the data that was collected is a lot of responses to the survey and participation in the community were really that age group where either they were just starting their families or the term was family-forming ages. And so a place that they felt safe to have their child be watched while they exercise until they're old enough to join them. Special events room. The facility, the plan, has not only a lap pool but also a leisure pool with the sprays and the slides and the like. And what has been proven is if you also have a room next to the pool where they can have a birthday party in their wetsuits and be dripping, that has also been a very successful and an interest. Gymnasium. The plan calls for two full-size courts. And at the upper level, looking down onto the courts, it's envisioned to have a walking and jog track that was both expressed really all ages, from youth to seniors like me. And fitness room, definitely an area for exercise. A place where you could either have aerobics, dance, yoga. It would have specialized flooring, more of a spring floor, to be able to accommodate those type of activities. And again, a multi-purpose room, whether it's a place for tots to have a little tumbling or a painting class, or as you can see, even maybe it's either judo or for those that know their martial arts. Locker rooms, definitely wanted to have something very comfortable that would have accommodations for lockers, showers, and the like. And again, the vision is for a six-lane lap pool. It was clear from the feedback we had of the school district that we have one pool in our community, and they see that as a pool that they would like not to continue as being part of their programming. And so recognizing that, we included that in this design. And again, the recreation, more the leisure pool. In the research done by the Sports Management Group, which is a consultant we had to help us with our business plan, community centers, especially some of the early leaders in community center design, were in Colorado. And when they had this component as part of their plan, it definitely was helpful in that sustainability of ongoing revenue. This is really a feature that not only is enjoyed by the community and within range of the service area of our city, but is also something that becomes a destination and brings in additional revenue into our community. All in all, the different programming spaces comes to about 73,000 square feet, but in the planning of recognizing there's closets and doors and miscellaneous storage, the total square footage is envisioned to be about 94,000 square feet. Again, looking at what could be the probable cost, these are in 2006 estimates, but I think they definitely give you the range of what you could look at for cost recoveries. And so anywhere from ongoing operation costs, as you can see here, and total revenue, and that equates to recoveries anywhere from about 80% cost recovery to over 100%. We did do in 2006, the estimate was 36.6. Finance director helped convert that to 2012 dollars, and that's estimated to be about $41 million. Site cost, question mark. What is not identified is a site for this facility, so at this time we do not know whether that would be a situation of acquiring land or ideally looking at existing lands. Next steps is, of course, what we know is you need a site in order to pitch a project like this. One of the things that we did early on, actually in 2009, we did a tour of talking with every neighboring community, whether that was Kenmore, Bothell, Woodinville, Redmond, the school district, Lake Washington Technical College, Northwest College, Bastyr, the Evergreen Hospital, and talked about their interest in the project as well as sites. One of the sites that we did learn about from the school district is one that is right in between both our borders, and that is a 10-acre, three parcels that the school district owns for about a little over 10 acres, 10.5, and it is east of Mark Twain Park in Kirkland. As you can see from the diagram here, it's east of 134th and just north of northeast 104th. When we met with them actually back in 2009, they had communicated to us that this property, they don't see that it will be needed for their forecast of additional schools, additional elementary schools. And so we did look at this as a potential site. The recommendation from the consultants on the plan that has been prototyped, assuming surface parking of acreage of anywhere from 6 to 8 acres would be necessary to support such a facility based on the current prototype plan. One other thing we want to just bring to your attention, it really is a site that is not of that size in acreage, is a site that has been referred to in our community as Snyder's Corner. And as you can see here, it's just on top of the hill, 132nd Avenue Northeast is to the west, and to the north is Northeast 70th. I believe it becomes Northeast 70th Place. And it's under 5 acres, so it's very small. But just want to remind you that we do have this parcel land between our two communities, and whether that's something can accommodate either part of this plan or some other purpose, that site is there. So next steps, potential partners, as I mentioned, did you have a question?
Is that's in private ownership?
Snyder's Corner is actually owned by the city of Kirkland.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So potential partners, as I mentioned, when we went and visited all those different agencies and businesses, there was definitely interest to have support of this project, whether it's in capital and even ongoing operation. But without a site, that's very difficult. We recently completed working with a park funding exploratory committee that led to the recommendation of our Proposition 2 that's being proposed this November. The community center was definitely of an interest of the advisory group, and they really were wonderful supporters. As someone who's in the business of parks, I enjoyed hearing that. But what was recognized, it really wasn't bond ready. Without having a site identified, it'd be very difficult to think that the community would be ready to just vote yes on that. What we do know is that one of our bonds will expire in 2022, which seems really far from now, so hopefully maybe that won't be that long, but it is something to consider, and we know that the economy is where it is today, so we see some opportunities potentially in our future. The school district, whether this is a project to look at their sites as well, and also some partnership, and whether or not maybe something in the future for our two cities to look at as well. And that completes my presentation.
Thank you. Mr. Myers.
In the operating costs, was an amortization of the capital costs included?
Yes, the project cost includes the capital as well.
But I think there was roughly $2.8 million per year operating. Does that include amortization of capital?
Oh, excuse me. I misunderstood your question. Let's see here. If it I can understand does. Your question again.
Seems low.
The operating costs do not include, let's see, as far as building reserves, but these numbers are strictly the 2006 numbers.
But these are only for the day-to-day operation of the facility and do not include any amortization or recognition of capital costs.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Kurt.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. I just wanted to say part of the reason we thought this would be a good time to have this discussion is I think, like you, the City of Kirkland has a quarterly meeting with Lake Washington School District. And at our last quarterly meeting, then-superintendent said that it was clear that they were not going to be recommending replacing the Juanita High School swimming pool. And so that was going to come to a close. And should their levy pass and they rebuild the high school, they're not going to include this as one of their elements. And so they said, we're certainly willing to be a partner in some way, but the way that we probably have is to donate some land. And they would like to see some sort of regional aquatics facility occur. And that's really something that we want to let you know is happening now, and you need to start planning for it. So this idea of something jointly on our border, maybe in partnership with the school district, was something we all thought was worthy of a conversation right now.
Mr. Nixon.
So I wasn't on the council when this design was done, but is the lap pool that you're talking about in the design deep enough and long enough for competitive swimming? Is it a 25-meter pool, a 50-meter pool, and is it at least 4 feet deep?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So it could serve competitive swim as well as exercise.
Great.
Mr. Carson.
And I was going to ask your point was about the – I'm sorry, I slipped my mind. What I was going to ask you about the the closing of the pool. What is the timing of that? And that's what I
– Well, according to the school district, I certainly want to speak for that, but – when they replace Juanita High School, they're basically going to tear down the stuff around and including the pool first and then rebuild. So I think it's 2018, assuming their levy passes. And if not, there's certainly more time, but we're talking about 5 years from now.
Mayor McBride?
Just two other things. I think just two things. I think that our plan also included a therapeutic pool that was included in the...
It'd be in the design of the leisure pool because of the temperature that would be provided in that design. So that's usually where they'll have about two or three lap, almost what will look like lap lanes as part of that overall design.
Well, I remember, brings me to my second point. When we were first talking about this several years ago, we went on a field trip to Vancouver, the city of Vancouver, and they actually have a few of these community centers. And I have to say, I was not the biggest fan of this sort of a center for our town until I saw what this center had done for Vancouver and how it, you know, people were drawn to it, all ages. And they actually did have a therapeutic pool. So they had the lap pools. They had sort of the fun pool for the kids and the spray center. But they also had the ability to lower wheelchair, folks with wheelchair, into a special area where there was water that was moving and therapeutic and of a certain temperature. So it was for everyone, no matter what your age, no matter what your abilities. It was amazing. And, you know, I don't think this is something we'd want to do now, but maybe sometime this summer, you know, I'd be happy to go down to Vancouver again and take a look at that. And maybe some of you would like to come as well. They were able to get sponsors to, you know, help with defray the cost of the center. And some of them were quite large donations in the millions of dollars. It was really amazing and inspirational. It might be something we could think about as a joint field trip. Not in the winter, but perhaps in the summer sometime. Thanks.
Ms. Sweet.
These take some getting used to.
Just the other day, we were at an event at Mercer Island Community Center. What an amazing community center that is. I mean, it's teeming with people all day long, every day, and its vitality is just, it's unarguable. We are two communities that live on lakes, and we have a significant responsibility, I believe, to make sure that we have resources and opportunities to teach our children to swim. We're losing that when we lose swimming pools that are accessible all year long. What we have in Kirkland is we've got our pool up at Juanita that is, I mean, let me tell you, I'm a water aerobic person up there, and you're fighting for your time and your space. And the pool's completely beat up. We also have swim teams in our schools. Our only ability to have swim teams in our schools is if we have places for those kids to practice, places for those kids to develop the skills that may get them on college teams at some point. So I think this is a really important consideration as we look at this. I agree this is not going to happen anytime soon, but I believe that in order for it to happen in the future as a public-private partnership, cross municipalities, we need to put some, I don't know whether I hate to say resources, but we need to put some energy around it now, or we'll continue to come back to a table in your city or our city and look at a beautiful design that we all want to make happen and try and not make progress toward it. So, my words.
Ms. Allen.
Well, I too have been to the Vancouver Center, as well as the one in Shoreline, which is teeming with activity, seemingly 24/7. There's water capacity. There's all sorts of meeting spaces. There are yoga classes going on. I mean, it's wonderful. And certainly, when we've been talking to our residents over the last few years, we've been talking. One of the things we hear all the time is aquatic. You know, our pool is aging out. Once. It's on its second or third life. And so it's definitely been something that's been at the forefront of our residents as well. One of the things that I look at when I look at these successful models like Vancouver and like Shoreline is, you know, how can we get a hold of what they did? I mean, and at least take a look at it rather than reinvent the wheel or, you know, look and see how they managed to get such successful spaces in their communities, and I'd be in support of that.
Mr. Vache.
So what kind of conversations did occur around making it a public-private partnership, say the private sector operating it, the public sector providing land or construction? Did you have those conversations?
We did not, but I think we should.
I would agree. That would be a starting place.
Deputy Mayor Marchioni.
I think we should also make sure, since it was Dr. Kimball who was the one that talked about donating property from the school district, that we have another conversation to make sure that the new management of the school district would agree to that. But I think that's a great start. If we could get the land donated, that would be huge in keeping down expenses.
Mr. Stillen.
So the one thing that occurred to me as this was being described, and I made my notes here, it looks like a public pro club, because as you listed off everything that's in this facility, there's tennis courts, basketball track, multiple swimming pools, and it seems to me that a good way to understand what the model is of operating one of these things is to go talk to the pro club and find out what it costs there. Now, that's paid for with membership fees, and that seems like a really interesting model. So, and in looking at it, The one thing I wondered, too, was it's got a lot of everything in it. So what is it really good for? And do we end up diluting it by having everything under the sun in one place? So that was my reaction there. And then as far as the school district, I think that's a really neat plan. They put one chunk of money in for something that has ongoing costs. And the Mighty Madison Knights, I was on the swim team. That's where I learned to be a lifeguard. All the high schools in Milwaukee have swimming pools that are operated by the public schools. So it'd be nice if they donated the land, but I'd also like to know that they're going to continue to fund the operation of it somehow with payments for their swim teams, because that's just something that won't go away. And if the school district is really committed to it, they would fund some operating costs of it too, in addition to putting up some money to get the original facility. So that's kind of my reaction, but I think much needed.
Mr. Asher.
I would like to have in the mix potential for creation of a park district that would overlay all our parts of Kirkland and Redmond and parts possibly of Bellevue. They have an aquatic facility in the southern part of Bellevue, but I would think that this might be appealing to folks in the northern part. And to be able to put that overlay that would be able to provide ongoing dedicated revenue for the operations and the ongoing maintenance over time, I think could be a very good thing.
Mr. Flynn.
As the chair of the Parks and Human Services Committee for the council, so just some thoughts on, I think my perspective is that the city of Redmond, we have some community centers, but they're not. We don't have a real great kind of location for a community center. We have the old Redmond Schoolhouse, which is, you know, we're using with from the school district or renting from them, essentially. We have the teen center. We have the senior center. And then we have our pool. And those are sufficient facilities for now, but we really, I think, at some point need to think about, can we do something that is a true community center for Redmond? And this is an interesting idea for us. I think we'd have to really look at, is this a good location for the city of Redmond, you know, to help serve the needs of our residents? So that would be one question that I would have in my mind. Is that something that we would want to pursue that would help? Could we make it a win-win for Kirkland and Redmond or not? So that would be a question that I would have. And I think we probably have to you know, start thinking about that in terms of having a true community center. Because we do have some options. That we do have the pool. It's been refurbished. We don't know how long that's going to last for now. If we end up trying to do something on that site to replace it with a similar facility, I'm not sure. But I think those are things that we kind of have to think about as well for the city of Redmond. See, I guess, pull this as an option and see, would this help serve our needs or not, given some other thoughts there or other options.
Mr. Margeson.
Well, I like the concept of going together and creating something. And Mr. Asher mentioned some sort of a park district or something. My suggestion is to be specific to this facility. This facility is a district, and that's it. I also like the concept of bringing in additional players like the school district, because they're going to get a benefit. My only concern is, at Juanita, you probably have Lake Washington and Juanita High School sharing pool time. At Redmond Pool, we have Redmond and Eastlake High School sharing pool time. And for Eastlake to get all the way over to 134th or even over to 132nd, that's a long haul. So that'll have to be, that's a hurdle we'll have to get through with the school district, because I don't know that necessarily will work for Eastlake High School, whether or not there's another option out there or not. I do want to make sure that we don't get stuck holding the bag for all of the maintenance and whatnot, and there is some, whatever the right amount is, contributions coming from the school district for the use of the pool. But I like the concept, and I think it's if we can sit here and agree that this is conceptually something we should go forward, at least it starts the conversation. And as I recall, a couple of years ago, this is kind of where we were. We were thinking along these lines about some, we'll call it a super center, if you will, that had a lot of these different facilities or different options within the facility. And so I'm kind of thrilled to see this come back, and it looks like it's being baked, so that's good.
Ms. Wallen?
And I'm happy to see it come back as well. I was involved in the Parks Funding Exploratory Committee, and we came up with what's going to end up on the ballot with the clear instructions to our council that we were to go back and work hard on some sort of indoor recreation center. I think it only makes sense to do it with another community. My question is, I mean, we have strong community interests, and it sounds like you have strong community interests. So then next steps are, And I think maybe some sort of joint meeting with the school district to see exactly where they are, and we could appoint a couple of players and have our Mr. Triplin and Mr. Marcioni make us maybe a little task force to bring back some recommendations to us. It's going to be difficult to get us all together to do it, but I have faith in the gentleman in charge. Thanks.
I have Mr. Carson, then Mr. Nixon, then Ms. Sweet.
So the concern I have actually, well, I do like the idea of Metropolitan Parks District, like Mr. Margeson and Mr. Asher are talking about. It makes sense. Sharing the cost of a mutually beneficial or, you know, three-way beneficial facility like this is pretty clear. It brings down the cost for all of us. But the one thing, and I know there's a very fine line between delivering something that's got everything but the kitchen sink and delivering not enough to entice people to want to pay for it. And to that point, I saw a lot of elements that you see in the Pro Club, or we have Gold's Gym here has virtually everything except for maybe the running track, and it's obviously financed privately, so I have a concern of, you know, if we build something too big or with too many facilities, we're going to be stepping on the private sector in our own communities. So, and I'm sure you have facilities like this in Kirkland. So I think we can come to something that is right-sized, but I do have those concerns about something. So it seemed to me that there were certain aspects of the proposal here that were a little bit infringing on that private sector. So that's a concern.
Mr. Nixon.
Well, Mr. Carson just said almost word for word exactly what I was going to say, and so I'll just say ditto. I guess the example I would use is in Kirkland, we just had, where Larry's Market used to be in Totem Lake, we just had LA Fitness invest millions of dollars in refurbishing that into a very large, very elaborate fitness facility with a lot of these kind of facilities there. And I'd hate to see us use tax revenue to undercut the private sector. Clearly, there are some parts of the facility that would not be commercially successful, but there are parts that are, and we need to do an analysis of each of those to make sure that we don't impact negatively on where private investment is already meeting the need in the community.
Ms. Sweet.
Well, I'd be really interested in, as we look at this more closely, looking at the models in Shoreline and Vancouver to see how they involved, you know, public partnerships, because I think there have got to be opportunities for that. There will always be a portion of our population who's not going to join a club. There will be school-driven people coming to this. There will be neighborhood people driven to this, seniors. I'd like to see some partnership with Evergreen Hospital around therapy services. I know we've had that conversation with them in the past. So I think there's a whole lot of more exploration that we can do. Given the way that LA fitness centers are popping up just almost as much as total liquor stores right now, I think the market is out there. The health consciousness in our community is becoming more and more important. Physical fitness is becoming more and more important. I just think we have nothing but opportunity, and we should begin that exploration.
Mr. Myers.
I was heard nice things about Vancouver and Shoreline both, so I was looking. And the question we've had, and we had last time we discussed this, was where the facilities are located, because we're going to be serving a population of about 140,000, and we're looking for some sort of central location. So I checked the population of Vancouver just now. The population of Vancouver is 140,000, and they have five facilities. So I checked the population of Shoreline, and their population is 50,000, and they have one facility. So I think part of the concern that we have to address is, do we build one gargantuan everything facility Or do we have to distribute some of these things around? Because if we use the Vancouver model in particular, serving about the same area and the same population, it's a multiple facility model.
Mr. Stillen.
So I mentioned the Pro Club before, and I couldn't afford to continue my membership at the Pro Club. So I know there are going to be people out there that are not going to have access to facilities. So I am a fan of public swimming pools. I do believe that we need to teach our kids how to be safe in the water and whatnot. So as this plan moves forward, what I'd like to see is sort of split apart the capital and operational, because to me, the public investment to provide the facility is one thing, and that may be the thing that ensures that anybody in the community can have access to the services. But then I'd also like to look at the different operational models, because I think of the Y operates facilities like these. I don't know if the Boys and Girls Club does, but it seems like there's a lot of people out there that know how to operate such a facility. And it would really be good to kind of look at what the different options are there to make something like that work, because I do want to make sure that everybody can have access to this if we're going to put public funds into it. And then the other thing I wanted to touch on was something that Council Member Flynn mentioned about siting. I think we're going to talk economic development after this, right?
If we have time.
And so I'm just wondering how this all fits into it. You know, when you put a facility like this, to me, it looks like it's out in the middle of the woods, and that might be a great place for it. But is it actually sited at a place where our buses can get people to? I'm trying to think of what bus goes up 185th Street and
221, I think it
yeah.
is.
Yeah, or 132nd, but up, it's got to connect.
238.
Yeah. So that whole idea of accessibility, I think that was touched on. Do you have one big facility or multiple facilities in the city? So I think there's got to be just a little more kind of cooking there to see how that happens. So.
So I guess in summary, what I hear is maybe three issues is, and I combine scope and site. I think, Redmond staff should work with Kirkland staff, and, you know, we've identified our set of needs and understand your set of needs. Then look at siting options, whether it's one or many. Probably a rough estimate of cost and financing options, and whether that's the right work program exactly, I'm not sure, but do you have a parks committee of sorts? I don't know what committees you have.
Do you have a park board?
Oh, but do you have a council committee, a parks council committee? Soon.
It's hatching.
Because that might be the level to have the more informal conversation as ideas are explored, you know, to what level participation wants to be. I just throw that up as a trial balloon. Any immediate reaction, Mr. Murchison?
And conceptually, I like what we've seen tonight, but I also don't want to preclude any other options. For example, the suggestion that you may look at multiple sites, smaller sites, so it's not quite such a big capital outlay for each one individually. And if you've got a site that you own that might fit the exercise and whatnot and party center, and then you have a pool in another area, and then we as communities keep looking around for these sorts of things and say, okay, where are we deficient, whether it's through the private is deficient or whether we're deficient, where can we fill those needs? So I wouldn't take any option off the table at this point in time. I think it's just we're still in exploratory mode, but I think there's definitely interest.
Yeah, the proposal is really to generate options, right, not necessarily make decisions, and generate options on scopes and sites, you know. Mr. Asher.
Yeah, one of the things that came to mind during the discussion of is if we're the two sites that we're talking about really are the spine of Rose Hill that they fall on, I think it would be worth including the King County Library System in at least the discussions, because that's an area where I think they might see some future opportunities that might align with our planning horizon too.
Mr. Carson.
Is it an underserved area? Is that what you,
yeah.
Basically, okay. So it could be maybe a small branch where you just come in and pick up old books and stuff like that.
And particularly when you're creating community gathering places, I think it fits naturally.
Mm-hmm. I like the computer area.
So, Tom, can you put this on your work program for next year? And
you bet.
See where we go from mm-hmm. there.
Sounds good.
I was going to move us on to economic development.
Right. Yep.
In 20 minutes or less. Thank you, Jennifer. We had three pieces here on economic development that I think at staff level we were talking about what to share. And one piece is One Redmond and what we're doing there. Two is we're part of Enterprise Zone, IPZ. And then the third is one to share with you what we do with our Easy Code. This is an economic development tool that I tried to display at Suburban Cities and didn't quite work, but we got it working tonight. And that wasn't Easy Code's problem. That was user fault. But is that consistent with what mm-hmm. Kirkland wants to talk about?
Sure. You can cover that in 20 minutes.
Well, I will go briefly. I guess if we don't allow for a lot of questions, well, if we save our questions to the end, maybe we could be successful. One Redmond is a combination. Is the idea of One Redmond came out of the council wanted to invest in economic development and created an economic development alliance. We already had a chamber. We also had started a community foundation for community events and other ways of building relationships in the city. And of course, you had the city. And so you had three groups at least. If you count taxation, you can say four groups going out and asking the same people for the same money. And so realizing this, I met with the chamber board or the chamber president, and we talked about let's bring the leadership from all these groups together and see if we can work towards one vision. And the chamber had this idea of a community of excellence. So we started with the community of excellence and what makes a community of excellence. And we came up with a mission statement of how quality of life and economic development go together and how what kind of economic development we saw within our city and how these different parts should work in harmony towards the same vision. Because in the end, we believed that close enough, we all wanted the same thing. So we started by raising some money, and we did a feasibility study. And the feasibility study was to go out and interview 60 different businesses in Redmond and 20 different community members to test market the idea. We had come up with five key elements, if you will. One was we wanted capacity for businesses to expand in Redmond. We have found that it's difficult to expand in Redmond because of land, mostly. We wanted to retain our existing companies. The retained company is cheaper than the recruitment. But third was recruiting companies from outside the area. An important feature here, distinction, is we consider our competition Boston and Austin and the Silicon Valley and North Carolina. We don't consider Kirkland or Bellevue or Issaquah our competition. So when a business moves from Redmond to Kirkland, we consider that retention because they stayed in the market as opposed to, oh, we lost. The fourth item is community quality of life and community development and how this covered issues as community celebrations, but also touched on issues as affordable housing and transportation. And the last one was educated workforce. We have found the two skills missing have been computer programming and machinists. And in interviewing a number of CEOs in Redmond, they can train a machinist, and if he's really good, Boeing will come and steal him or her. So some have used various strategies. Some have increased their pay. Some have trained people right out of high school. but finding enough machinists to serve in Redmond is a problem. So working with education and workplace sources to generate the labor pool that we needed. We are in the process of, I'll say birthing, because it's painful, of forming the One Redmond Board and getting people to sign on that dotted line such that the first quarter of next year, One Redmond will be its own entity, and the Redmond Chamber and the Redmond Economic Development Alliance and Realize Redmond will have folded into that and no longer exist as their own organizations. So that was something that the council and I and the most of the community have been working on for the last couple of years, and I'm not ready to declare victory yet, but I am ready to say that we're making good progress, and I think I'm very optimistic. So the last thing I want to add to that is each of the four entities had three representatives on a temporary board, and that John Stillen and Pat Vache and I serve from the city perspective. And do you gentlemen have anything to add?
Let's see, we have 15 minutes left, so I guess not.
Yes, no,
there is a lot going on. So.
Would you just name the four groups again? I only got three of them down.
Oh, the city.
Oh, yeah.
The Chamber, the Economic Development Alliance, and then our Community Foundation. Yes.
So, John, the ultimate goal here will be to have an organization that functions as a resource for fundraising for philanthropic kinds of things, a 501c3.
That's part of it.
For policy making from the perspective of the chamber?
Yes.
And then to concentrate on those elements of economic development that you described.
Correct.
And will those wings of the organization, because they're obviously going to have to be separate, operate? I mean, have you any idea what design is going to look like?
I'd say no, and actually I'm not sure that they're necessarily going to be separate. We're trying to infuse that economic development, community, quality are part of the same strategy.
Well, just a comment. I mean, you will have to separate your 501c3.
We have both. We have a 501c6 and a 501c3. But the we haven't hired an executive director. We haven't set up a formal organization. We set up goals and creating a board, and we've been incorporated properly.
Yeah. Basically, that's what that interim board is struggling with right now, is around doing the bylaws for two different organizations, a C3 and a C6, so that they work together to hit the to meet the well-known vision and goal that we've established. So it is sort of in the details of how you implement that vision within two different organizations, a C3 and a C6.
Doreen?
I know you have described the broader vision of what this would do, but we have a small part of that is always coming before our Economic Development Committee of our council, and that has to do with community events like, so how do you fund events here like Derby Days and the holiday lights and stuff?
Currently, the city puts up, I would say, roughly half the money, and the other half is sponsorships. Like they sponsor the music stage or they sponsor different aspects of different events. Where's Craig?
Is it about 50-50?
That's about right.
About 50-50 is how we do that. We want to be in a position in the future where the 501c3 can take corporate donations. There's a tax benefit, and we could raise more money for our community events. But the city still, I would envision, be a participant in how it comes together. David?
And don't underestimate beer sales.
Beer sales, yes. Yeah, I have a story on that, but that'll be for later.
So do you have a community grant process for those events?
We don't grant money. I guess in about 1999, the city ended up taking over a couple of the events because they were floundering. And so we just have the sponsorship money that we collect and the general fund revenue we put into it.
And one follow-up, if I could. So your LTAC monies, how do you manage those?
About, I think, it's 39% of those go towards community events, 39% of the tax receipts. We have, of course, an LTAC board, and we strive to – we've made our derby days, and we're making Redmond Lights longer on the weekends to try to generate heads and beds. And with our bicycle races, trying to get a Friday – we have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of different athletic competitions, so we continue generating LTAC money. Mr. Murchison.
I was just going to add – and oh, it's escaping me. It's having a senior moment here. You mentioned grants, and which is essentially the city granting money to an organization to put on an event. We put the event on and collect sponsorships from the private, so there's the subtle difference between we were granting it out to somebody else to put it on. That's the difference.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I know.
Mr. Stillen, and then Ms. Wallen.
So participating in the process to get One Redmond in place, I think what the real powerful thing about it is it brings organizations with different interests together in one room where they all have to agree on something that is in the mutual interests of all parties involved. And I think that's where it breaks with what we're doing today, because I've sat there and seen certain interests come into the room where they would make a decision, and it's that classic thing where somebody would say, well, you guys – well, it's no longer you guys, it's us guys have got to figure this out. So I think it's going to result in a more integrated approach to decisions being made in the city, where all the people that used to have to be herded up to reach a decision are going to be working on that together instead of separately. And I think that's what's going to be the true power of the One Redmond organization, is they're all, everybody will work in what's in the best mutual interest of the city and the community. And, so we envision Redmond being a great place to be. That's what this organization's there to do.
Ms. Wallen.
So ultimately, there would be an events coordinator who would be employed by the One Redmond organization?
We really haven't gotten to that level of detail. Mm-hmm. Right now, the city has an events coordinator. At a minimum, One Redmond be part of the fundraising. But we haven't gotten to that level of discussion. I think to conclude this part, the other thing that One Redmond has done is brought in a large part of our business sector that's sat on the sidelines, which is most of our tech companies, particularly along Willows Road. They had no reason to go into chamber events because they saw that as retail stores, and they're not retail stores. They've really sat on the sidelines in terms of community discussion, community participation. And we actually have a number of Willows Road companies who are excited to participate in the community in a way that's meaningful to them and to their employees. So we have time for one more item, and that is we'll talk briefly about our IPZ zone. And one of our participants in One Redmond is a school called DigiPen. And DigiPen is the premier gaming school. And Erica Vanderbrand is here to talk to us about DigiPen and a lot about IPZ.
Okay, and I'm going to do this quickly, too. I'm Erica Vandenbrand, and I am the Economic Development Manager here at the city. Last September, the city of Redmond, the geography, we were designated as an innovation partnership zone. We received this designation by the State Department of Commerce. This designation essentially recognized that we had the world's top three gaming platforms here on site, so that the Windows, Xbox, and then the Wii, and then also we had Sony here at that point. This interactive media and digital arts is sort of a code for games development and then mobile applications on phones. But I think the really compelling and important thing to recognize is that there's what's called gamification happening throughout our technology sector. And so that the way we interact with games, that also maps into our aerospace industry as well as our medical industry. We are one of 15 innovation partnership zones in the entire state. The partnership zone designation is good for 4 years, so we have this until 2015, in which we apply again.
The partners in this innovation partnership zone include Enterprise Seattle, DigiPen Institute of Technology, UW-Bothell, the Redmond Economic Development Alliance, and then Microsoft. The types of activities that we've engaged in, just very briefly, are essentially going cradle to cradle in terms of looking at education, going through the spheres of getting people from education into the workforce, into the technology sector, and then essentially creating jobs for them and new types of products. The kinds of things that we've done today is that we have engaged with Game Startup 101 and boot camps to help give people skills along with Washington Interactive Network out of Enterprise Seattle to essentially take a concept from idea into actual market production. We've also had a number of partnerships that we've formed as part of this, as well as set up internship opportunities. The private sector has embraced this. We had a mobile innovation hub launch on June 14th here in our downtown, where essentially it's a little incubator space for small business development. And then sort of wrapping this up, going back to One Redmond, we've had really proactive engagement by DigiPen Institute of Technology, and we had a number of students that came in doing their fulfillment project for their fourth year. DigiPen Institute of Technology has a campus here on Willows Road, which is their premier campus. They also have campuses in Singapore and then Bilbao, Spain. And as part of this fulfillment project, the group of students came in and did a commercial for One Redmond, which I'll show now.
That was a team of about 20 to 25 students from Singapore who came to Redmond for 3 weeks. The first week, they were briefed on everything Redmond. None of them had been to Redmond before. They wrote everything in that, including the music, and produced it in the following two weeks. And the purpose was, this is what the real world is going to be like, is you're going to have someone say they want something, and they want it now. And we were happy to be their customer. And you can see it's a top quality product. And that's online if you'd like to see it. And our council, I know, and I've gone through it frame by frame because there's something unique in every frame. Erica?
Couldn't have said it any better myself.
So that's any questions on IPZs for Erica? I know that was a bit rushed, but I promised Mayor McBride there would be an hour. Yes.
Can you expand your IPZ and take partners in?
Yes, that's a possibility. Are you looking for a family rate? Yes. Yes, that is something that we don't see necessarily limited, but we need to create the critical energy at one place. At one point, it was considered making all of King County that. We thought the critical mass wasn't there, that you needed a place for things to spark. Yes?
Just one quick question. I'm not totally clear. What does the zone do for you? Is it a tax district? How does it benefit the city to be in a zone?
So currently we receive no resources, no tax benefits. However, in keeping with the One Redmond theme, there's a very strong sphere of influence and the relationships and connections are invaluable. We got several tens of thousands of dollars of asset in terms of that commercial. And I think that in terms of just the relationships, it's been incredibly invaluable. From a private sector standpoint, it's provided that spark that Mayor Marchione talked about. And impetus for a mobile innovation hub. It's generating other ideas in the private sector along with that. And it also gives a focal point for some of our major players like Microsoft to begin to have a contextual conversation.
And I'd add, I know some of our commercial real estate managers have used the IPZ zoning as a way to sell to small gaming companies, and the advantage they see is the workplace talent is close by.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, you have any final words?
Well, first off, I'd just like to thank you for hosting us tonight, and thank you for a wonderful dinner and great conversation. And we hope that when we do this next time that you'll come to Kirkland, and we have a few commercials of our own we'd like to show you.
Oh, very good.
But thank you very much. I'd also just like to point out that Council Member Bob Sternoff couldn't be here tonight, and he does send his regards and his greetings.
I'd like to thank the Kirkland City Council for coming out. I know that you don't meet on this Tuesday regularly, so thanks for adding another meeting to what I know is already a busy schedule. And we'll conclude this joint study session and take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back into regular study session. Thank you.
Thank you.